But first to Rome, where anyone following the morning's proceedings will know now that the Pope's coffin has arrived at his final resting place. And we're going to be joined by John Cook, RTÉ News reporter, who has been on the ground there all week amongst the 250,000 strong crowd in Rome. And John has been out and about talking to some of the people gathered there all morning. And we're going to first take a listen to those.
My name is Christopher Hanson, and I come from, my grandmother comes from Castlebar in County Mayo. I'm an Irish citizen living in Spain. I think it's the first time that I've been able to come to Rome for such an impressive ceremony. To be here as early as we could and to find so many people who are ready to give their whole day to praying for the Pope and, more important, for the Church, to pray for the world that we have good spiritual leadership. I think that's really key.
My name is Sister Mariam, and I'm a Carmelite nun from Australia. And it's a very great blessing to be here present to pray for the Holy Father, because he's been a true father to me in my religious life. I made my first profession of vows when he was made Pope, and I've received so many graces and blessings from him. So to happen to be here to pray for him at his funeral is the grace of a lifetime.
Yeah. You told me you know a very special Irish nun.
Yes, Sister Claire Crockett from Derry. She's very popular in my community of Carmelite sisters. We've been very inspired by her story. We feel very close to her, and she had a great love for the Holy Father. So I feel like she's the one who's let us be here today to pray for the Pope.
Supporters in Ireland say she may be a saint one day.
Oh, we pray to her all the time, and but she's inspired us with her life. She's so completely committed to building up the Church and to loving our Lord and just giving everything. And I think as a millennial, just to see someone who's giving everything.
I'm from Westport in County Mayo. Christina Basquel.
Christina, did you come especially to be here for the Pope's funeral?
I was here for the canonization tomorrow.
Okay.
We're here for the funeral instead.
How does it feel to be here?
Well, wonderful, a great experience.
Your thoughts on Pope Francis?
He was a wonderful man. I hope his replacement follows on.
John Cook, thank you for bringing us that. You've been standing amongst those incredible crowds, estimated at 250,000 people. How would you describe the mood there this morning in St. Peter's Square, and as that funeral cortege made its way the 5 kilometres to the final resting place?
Well, it's a moment in history, Anya, and people very pleased to be here. Over 200,000 of them filing into St. Peter's Square, we're told. And I can tell you many tens of thousands I've walked with them outside of St. Peter's, through the streets of Rome, outside of the Vatican, towards Santa Maria Maggiore Basilica. It's where I am now, sitting outside as the burial of Pope Francis, or the interment of his coffin, is taking place inside the basilica, his favourite basilica. We've heard Dublin man Jason O'Connell is a man I'm just after chatting to here on the footpath. He said, "I'm after seeing the Pope's coffin come around the corner in the Pope Mobile proudly." And he spoke of his devout faith and how special it was to be here for Pope Francis' funeral. He also joked that at home, he said, some, including his wife, think he's almost a priest. But he's very proud of his faith and proud to be here today. Along the route as well, I walked with a woman from Rome. What street we were on, Anya, I can't tell you because I don't know my way that well around here. But I asked her, I said, "Is this still the Vatican?" And she said emphatically, "No, it is not. It is Rome." And people were very keen to stress the significance of Pope Francis being buried outside of the Vatican. Clergy I've spoken to in recent days, including here at St. Peter's and the Maria Maggiore Basilica, say it's very much about being close to the Virgin Mother. That was Pope Francis' devotion to this basilica that he visited so often. Other people here who live in this area, that's seen as a little bit poor. It's close to the Colosseum in Rome, ordinary Rome, you might say. Migrants or poorer people living here, people will say. And indeed, it was poorer and oppressed people that were here symbolically to welcome his remains to the church. They tell me that this burial outside of the Vatican is very symbolic because this is an open church, they say, or Pope Francis' church was an open church. Whatever the reason, Anya, maybe it's both. This, I think, is the most significant part of Pope Francis' funeral and the week we've seen. in many ways, because it breaks with tradition. He's the first Pope buried outside the Vatican in over 120 years. But just a couple of other reflections to give you. As somebody said to me this week, Pope Francis broke with lots of traditional thinking in the church. It made it okay to be gay. That's a line that was said to me by several young men I met here in the Vatican this week. Others said he stood up for migrants, he spoke up for the poor. He went to see prisoners on Holy Thursday just days before his death. President Higgins noted his devotion to the poor, but also to climate change and to nature. And he said we know from many, he was not afraid to speak out on peace. Meetings, we're told, will take place here this afternoon on the fringes of this funeral. A second meeting, perhaps, between American President Donald Trump and Ukrainian Vladimir Zelensky. And it's very symbolic, many felt, to see the signs of peace made inside St. Peter's. What might come of these meetings? Well, many will pray for the outcome there. Others will hope for Pope Francis' legacy to continue in a new pope. Others told me they're not fans. They'd prefer a more traditional approach, a more conservative approach. One man mentioned the Latin Mass. He'd favour that this morning. Time will only tell. Cardinal Pietro Parolin, I think it was, the Italian cardinal, seen as one of the front runners in a conclave that's to come, spoke about the need to find a replacement for St. Peter, not Pope Francis. Well, time will only tell what comes out of this, but certainly, Anya, a very interesting week.
Well, John Cook, you might not know your street names, but you have been adept all week at finding those Irish voices in the crowd. Thank you, John Cook, for RTÉ bringing us the latest there. Coming back now to our political panel, Maria Walsh, Kathleen Funchen and Kieran Mullooly. Maybe Kieran, to you first. When you reflect on the week that was on this papacy, how would you characterise it? Maybe specifically when it comes to influencing policy here in Ireland, globally, what do you think is the legacy?
I think first and foremostly, it's a tribute to the work that Pope Francis did. And in an Irish context, I take my hat off to him every day for what he did when he started in 2013, because he found a mess, clerical sex abuse. And he dealt with it head on. I think a lot of people have forgotten that in the last few days, what he actually did. He started with a mistake. He backed a Chilean bishop called Juan Barros. He backed him against allegations that he was involved in a cover-up. But he changed his mind. He investigated, and within 2 months, he sacked him. And he asked the Chilean episcopate to resign after that. And then furthermore, critically, and people never mentioned this week, and nobody mentioned this week, he went and changed the rules in terms of the what bishops did. The pontifical secret was abandoned. That was the ability of a bishop to say that it was an abuser was heard about in confession. It was Pope Francis that did away with that. And to me, that was huge in an Irish context, because in a former life, Anya, I covered multiple cases of clerical sex abuse. And in almost every one of them, the Catholic Church was well aware of what was going on. And in fact, gave consent to priests being moved around a lot. And to me, that would be his legacy. He certainly failed in later years with regard to key issues. I know that he did move towards women deacons. A lot of people were very disappointed. And I think it's inevitable that that's going to have to be revisited by the Church. But to me, he hit the big core Irish issue and he tackled it head on.
Kathleen Funchen, same to you. How would you characterise it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I do think he's a great loss. I think one of the things that's unusual when we look at religion, we don't often think of young people, and to see over the last number of days, young people, you know, in terms of his stance on Palestine, you know, it was emerged that he had, I think, a nightly phone call with the priest that was stationed in Gaza. So I think there's a lot of people will, and he was also very adamant about the causes of migration and why, you know, the cause of war, obviously people have to flee and that we need to tackle that. So I think that is a great legacy, and I really hope that the Church can continue in that vein, because I do think he brought kind of you know, like an honesty and, you know, a sort of down to earth atmosphere that we hadn't seen previously. But I suppose separate to that, there is still, you know, questions and a lot that the Church needs to do, particularly here in Ireland from an Irish context. I'm very conscious that, you know, we learned of the death of Michael O'Brien this week as well, who was a fantastic advocate and a great voice. And lots of people will remember his powerful contribution on what Questions and Answers a number of years ago. And, you know, there's a lot of people who were failed and who are still being failed. And, you know, when it comes to even redress for the mother and baby home survivors, the Church has done very, very little. So that does need to be dealt with. But I do think that him as an individual, and I really hope now that we see more of that, that there isn't kind of a closing of ranks. That would be my fear, that they might go back to, you know, like secrecy and days of, because the Church does have to move forward if it wants to bring young people with it. And, you know, and I do think that that needs to happen. So I hope that we do see more of that. Yeah.
Maria Walsh, is there a platform, is there a legacy there to build on that?
Yeah, picking up from just what was shared, I mean, as a practicing Catholic who's also LGBTI plus individual and ally, you know, his work on saying the powerful sentence, "Who am I to judge?" Now, it didn't change the fact that he still followed in the footsteps of the Vatican's teaching.
So
that homosexuality,
right words, but not action.
Yeah, well, homosexuality was a sin. However, I have to stress, and he wasn't closed about it. You know, he met quite recently members of our trans community, LGBTI, other individuals, and the fact that he gifted, as John rightly pointed out, from people on the streets, he gifted the space for members of my community to catch the breath and say, you know, could we find a way home again? I do want to see this modern type thinking continue on, while I wish I was powerful to perform the puff of white smoke in the coming days and weeks. But he certainly created a podium for that change. And listen, I mean, what he will really be remembered for was what we've just saw in the last hour or so. The most powerful image I think we will see in peace is President Zelensky and President Trump coming together in the Basilica. I mean, that if that is your legacy, what an amazing legacy it is.
Yeah, and we're going to come back to Ukraine. And for listeners who haven't seen it, there is this incredible image that we will return to of Zelensky and Trump face to face in the ornate surrounds of the Basilica, having direct one-to-one talks for 15 minutes. Kira Mullooly, you know, at a time, and for listeners concerned about wars, geopolitics, cost of living, the threats of trade wars and tariffs. And we know US Vice President J.D. Vance was one of the last people to meet with Pope Francis last weekend. What do you think is the role of the Catholic Church today when it comes to some of those big global issues that the Pope did care about, such as migration?
Anya, I work in the European Parliament, where lobbying is the big thing. We're lobbied every day of the week by organisations. The Catholic Church has to be the lobby group in the world, over what, 1.2 billion people. And therefore, the Pope, the new Pope, who I hope will follow in Pope Francis' footsteps in some of those areas, has that clout. He has that clout. Look how many times he actually stood up and he took on world leaders. He was very, in a few recent weeks, he was very aggressive towards Putin. He was very aggressive in his comments about some of the other people, migrants in the past. So he had the clout, and I think that's the key thing in terms of church leadership going forward, to have the courage to stand up and make a claim, particularly for the poor and poverty. And that was Francis's triumph. I mean, okay, you might say it was symbolism when it came to the Ford Focus and the Fiat 100 thing, but it was important to people on the ground that he was aiming his message to people of a certain living, of a certain class, of a certain, and that was going back towards the poor and poverty. I think that was the critical thing. And he has clout in those areas.
Yeah, and would you like to see lobbying by a future pope converted, though, into real tangible outcomes? Because some of the critiques this week would say might have had the right morals and ethics, but hard sometimes to point to real tangible outcomes.
Well, to me, in some respects, this is the dilemma, or the I don't understand about the United States of America, what has happened in terms of the Trump situation. We saw when Trump was lectured recently from on a sermon in the US, how he reacted by being absolutely. But at the end of the day, the Catholic Church is huge membership in the United States. Once again, they have the lobby group. So it seems to me he's appealing to people's conscience, and he's appealing to people's, I suppose, inner spirit in terms of something going on. That's what he has. But he has 1.2 billion people behind them. And I just hope, and I'm actually optimistic about the next Pope as well, even though the conclave is the conclave, and I've seen the movie and I know anything can happen on these things, but I have to be on a serious note.
On a serious note, I go
back to what I think will happen, because I think Pope Francis had a hand in appointing 80 of those cardinals, and I think he met each and every one of them individually before he appointed them, and I believe that he will have met his message, because that was the way he operated. He met his message very clear when he was meeting people, and therefore I believe we'll see his value follow true, and I hope they'll emerge in the choice for the new Pope.
Kathleen Funchen, same question to you. Like, yeah, this Pope did make the care of migrants a real hallmark of his time. Do you think the next Pope this next Catholic Church iteration needs to continue on that front around care for migrants and other important issues like climate change, sustainability?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, I suppose I do strongly believe in a separation of church and state in relation to, you know, whether it's education, healthcare. And I think it's important. I think that Pope Francis was an incredible individual and a big loss. But I do think that we still need to see like a separation of church and state, and that I very strongly favour that. I think the role for the church is leadership as well in relation to its, you know, the community, people that have great faith. And I think that actually, if you look at a lot of, you know, teachings and scripture of the Bible, there isn't room for the judgment that sometimes we do see in then what becomes the institution of the church. And I think they're kind of two very different things. So I do think there role is leadership in terms of calling for peace, calling for like general acceptance for people to be able to, you know, live in a kind of an equal society. And we are living in uncertain times. We hear that phrase all the time now, but it is important that people can live, you know, and be respected regardless of their religion, regardless of sexual orientation, anything. And I think that that's where we want to see the direction going and see that leadership going in the
Maria
same
Walsh, how would you like to see the Catholic Church use its lobbying powers and forces?
I wholeheartedly agree with what Kathleen was just sharing, the separation of church and state, because and I'm a part of a European Parliament group, the EPP, which is a centre-right group, but very much lived and breathed of Christian values. And when you begin to start mixing with both, you see what we have historically. So for me, it's really important that particularly put an emphasis back on to the next appointee, that we have that the Jesuit teachings, like we saw with Pope Francis, and those humble living standards that he had for himself and he set out, and the little work he did, quite you know, the silent work he did, unknowing to many of us. But I have to say, when we see the extreme right rise and conservative rise, that's where it's even more emphasis when we look at whatever lobbying means. Ultimately, for me, I want a Pope that says, it goes back to, it is about the person, who am I to judge, bringing people together, peace, versus led by power and ego, which sadly we have on the rise in many, many areas, okay, particularly in this country too.
Okay, up next we'll be talking tariffs, those discussions in Rome this morning between Trump and Zelensky. We'll be back after these.
Saturday with Conor Mungon on RTE Radio 1.